Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Iran has seized the initiative and attacks the U.S. first rather than reactively. Clearly, Iran has the advantage. Also, while we are being told Kyiv is winning, Russia is systematically dismantling Ukraine. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here in Moscow. Should we call this Taco Sunday, the build up to, you know, the opening of the gates of hell? I don't need to repeat it. We all know it. We've heard it over and over and over again. So what is going on here? And we can spend time talking about Iran's strategy, because I kind of understand it and it makes a lot of sense. It's well thought out, 20 years in the making. But I'm sorry, I have to just go down to the most common denominator. The Trump people don't know what to do and they just want to play the market. I'm sorry for being so mundane, Mark.
You don't think they serve tacos in hell, Peter?
Well, hey, how you say it, I'm not against Trump tacos. That means he doesn't, extend the war, okay? But he doesn't end it either, Mark.
Yeah. So something unusual happened this last week. Up until now, the Iranian military position, not only in this conflict, but in conflicts going back last year and years before, has always been reactive. The U.S. attacks and they respond, hoping that that will then deter the United States and Israel from further attacks. It never has, of course. But after a five-day lull of no strikes on either side, suddenly, Iran seized the initiative and attacked U.S. Base in Jordan on this last Wednesday. And that, it was a shock. It was a shock to the United States because this was the first time they had acted, if you want to say, preemptively. They saw a buildup of U.S. forces there that they thought could be threatening for the next time the U.S. inevitably resumes their attacks, and they reached out and tapped it. Now, there's reports that they did so actually with older missiles, liquid-fueled missiles, some of the oldest missiles in their inventory. The U.S. says that it brought them all down. That's possible. But in this, there's speculation that Iran may have been trying to manage the escalation that their attack would respond to, that they want a state of conflict now between the U.S. and Iran because it benefits Iran. It continually, on a daily basis, makes the U.S. position less strong. It erodes away their power, unlike the Memorandum of Understanding or the ceasefire phase that actually you could say that Iran's leverage was being eroded away. And now the U.S. doesn't know how to respond. Trump is obviously flailing around. You have this interesting statement from the U.S. Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, Grinkovich, who said that he doesn't have the forces anymore to defend Israel and the U.S. homeland, and he may have to make a decision, which brings us an idea of how precarious the U.S. military position is. They've simply reached geopolitical hard limits of their munitions.
Well, it also says is that Israel and the United States are on par when it comes to security interests, which is just outrageous in itself. I mean, you as a former service member, I mean, that's extraordinary. So, George, I mean, again, you know, I never profess military expertise here, but what I can see is that the Israel, on the tail of what Mark just said, I'm sorry, Iran, is slowly but surely disarming the United States.
Well, I agree with Mark that for Iran, the status quo is highly undesirable because Iran understands that the status quo is exactly what the United States and Israel wants to do. They want to use the time that while there's no strikes going on, first of all, to replenish forces in the region, rebuild all of the forces that have been used up, and to find other ways to transport oil for other than the Strait of Hormuz. You know, usually use the pipelines, getting into the Red Sea and seeing and other countries to find other routes and to minimize the importance of the Strait of Hormuz. That's what the United States is doing. And then 6 months' time, they come back and hit Iran again. But this time, the Strait of Hormuz will not be as significant for Iran and for the world as it has been now. So that's Iran sees this, the status quo, as something that the United States wants to preserve, while Iran obviously doesn't want to do that. Iran clearly wants to make sure that it retains its leverage, that the leverage that it has over the Strait of Hormuz has been the key to bringing this this kinetic part of the war to an end. So I think the reason why Iran launched these attacks on Jordan last week was that the United States was settling into this nice situation whereby the United States, essentially the Americans now are rebuilding their forces and seeking to minimize the importance of the Strait of
Hormuz. Well, I mean, but at
that's
the same
thing,
time,
Iran cannot accept the diminution of the significance of the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, but we have the conflict expanding horizontally, Mark. I mean, so the relative value of the Strait of Hormuz is going to, for this foreseeable future, be very, very valuable if you have the Red Sea closed. I mean, I don't even know how you can even make that calculation. Mark, why doesn't, you know, so we saw the United States, as your word, preemptively attack American assets in Jordan. Why doesn't Iran attack Israel?
I think right now they have chosen not to because they're managing the conflict. They think they have enough on their plate. And it is much easier for them to hit U.S. bases in the surrounding Arab countries. The distance is less, there's less air defense. So it presents an easier target for them. Also, their strategy has been identified as debasification, that they are effectively driving the United States, at least out of their neighborhood of the Middle East. And in fact, this week, we saw the U.S. is completing its withdrawal from Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan, because their forces there just continually get hit by the Iranians. So first, they withdrew from most of their military bases to Jordan. And then in the last few exchanges, the tit for tats, Iran has been pounding Jordan. Now, the U.S. is seen as retreating even further to safety to Israel. But as we know from the first hot phase of the conflict, that's still within, well within the range of Iran's most advanced missiles and drones, of which they seem to have no real shortage of at the moment. But it's kind of like they're moving systemically, driving the U.S. further and further back. And they only have to deal with the U.S. right now rather than the U.S. and Israel. So in this phase of the escalation and their strategy, it seems to make sense for them to leave Israel for last.
So, you know, George, this seems to be kind of cyclical in a way. We, you know, we have a kinetic action, a lull, kinetic action, a lull. I mean, this can't continue ad infinitum because the United States is, it's widely reported, though the administration doesn't want to admit it, just low on ordnance, okay? And their ability to wage conflict against Iran, as Mark has described, is diminished because you're going to certain points like Jordan and Israel. So, I mean, isn't it about time to, obviously the Americans will never admit defeat, but, you know, adopt some kind of narrative to start putting this to an end, because there doesn't seem to be any good end for this policy, this ridiculous war of choice. I don't get it. I'm bewildered, George.
Well, I think that's the problem, that the United States hasn't given up on destroying Iran. I mean, it's basically, as the United States sees it, okay, we'll have a lull, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and then we're going to come back and hit Iran some more.
Yeah, but
and
George, but it's obvious that if you want to destroy Iran, the entire Gulf will be destroyed.
That's right. And that's why, you know, ultimately, since the United States hasn't given up on that goal. None of these preliminary agreements can go anywhere, because that was the point. For Iran does not trust the United States one bit. I mean, and that's it. Iran simply knows this is Iran is that the United States is going to come back, just like they walked away from the JCPOA, just like they walked away from the negotiations of 2025, just like they walked away from the negotiations before February of this year. The United States is going to use this interim period of the Memorandum of Understanding to prepare for the next strike. And as long as that's the case, then Iran is going to say, well, we're not going to go down this path. We're not going to go along, sell our oil and then allow you to build up your forces, because you're just going to come back and hit us again. So unless and until the United States gives up on that objective, I don't think there can be any deal. And I think then you have this unsustainable status quo.
So the question is, Mark, how many times does Donald Trump and Israel have to lose this war until they admit that they have lost this war?
Your problem, Peter, is that you think too logically and rationally for this administration. We had words from Trump on camera, and then with some follow-up on it in the Wall Street Journal this week. They seriously believe that if they just hit Iran a few more times really hard, the regime, the Iranian government, as they refer to it, will just peter out. Those are Trump's words, peter out. Again, Trump is a simple man with a hammer. It's a hammer that's seen better days. It's kind of antiquated. It's been overused. The grip is really bad. The hammer's about ready, the end's about ready to fall off. But everything looks like a nail. And if the problem persists, that those crazies in Iran refuse to just submit to me the way that they should, well, we'll just hit them a few more times. This is the neocon mantra. They never do anything wrong. It's just that it wasn't followed through enough. The neoliberal policies weren't enough, right? We didn't get rid of enough social programs. The attacks, the only problem was we didn't attack hard enough, fast enough, right? There's always more, just a bit more, and it will all be fine. It won't be fine. And the Pentagon admitted it in the last week, that their strikes against Iran in the coastal area around the Strait of Hormuz are inexpedient, because they're becoming ineffective, which is admitting that all of their strikes up to this time have been ineffective, because they have never been able to, and they will not be able to, destroy enough of Iran's plentiful of military assets to prevent them from reaching out and exerting control over that 21-kilometer stretch of the Strait of Hormuz right off their own coast.
I guess the realization of defeat will be when they've been completely thrown out of the Middle East, and then Israel's fate will be settled then. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news, and that real news, George, is Ukraine. Zelensky made an appearance in Washington. The express purpose was the funeral of Lindsey Graham, but he did get an audience with Donald Trump. From what I understand, it lasted a little over an hour. What did he get?
Well, he didn't get very much, because there was a big buildup prior to his visit. The buildup was that Zelensky was going to persuade President Trump and the United States that the two wars, the war against Russia, the war against Iran, are one and the same. Ukraine is really, really useful in fighting Russia, and now Ukraine can become really, really useful in fighting against Iran. And so that was his agenda. He went in to persuade Trump, hey, if you want help in knocking out Iran, we're there to help you. Now help us with Russia. And so that was his message. Trump really wasn't buying it, at least for the time being, he's not buying it. And now Zelensky has come with a new message. And this is a familiar one. It's an old message, which is, we're always just one won the weapon away from victory. You know, we've had, you know, remember the F-16s, the HIMARS, the ATACMS, all of these magical weapons, the Leopard tanks, the Abrams. So now we got the new weapon, the wonder weapon that's going to change the entire equation with Russia, and that this is the Patriot interceptor missiles. That's all we need. If only we can get more of those, then everything would be fantastic. Now, Trump seems now is very skeptical. He had apparently, you know, the media reported it, that the Ankara, he had allowed Ukraine essentially to take these trade secrets and allow Ukraine to manufacture the Patriot missiles. And now Trump has now given a number of interviews. He said, I don't think so. Maybe we'll think about that. But I don't really trust Ukraine.
Well,
allow them to manufacture the Patriot missile.
Yeah, I think the compromise will be to send a Zelensky a Lego kit of Patriots. So maybe that'll satisfy his appetite. Mark, it's not very often, or hardly at all, mentioned in Western media that Ukraine has lost access to the port of Odessa.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The German state official foreign policy mag Deutschwelle this week did a story that it seems like it should have been printed a month or two ago about the Kiev regime's flagging campaign to try to isolate Crimea with long-range strikes. And I've got family in Crimea. And so, I mean, they've made their lives a little more difficult, right? They've knocked out electricity a few times, which brings down the water for a few hours. You know, they've conducted a harassment campaign against a population that they supposedly want to rule over. A really good winning hearts and minds strategy there. But overall, the situation has improved over the last few months, and the Kiev regime / NATO drone campaign, that's what seems to be petering out, to borrow Trump's words. But they never mentioned that Russia has effectively, with long-range strikes, with missiles and drones, completely blockaded the Kiev regime from the Black Sea, from which before this conflict, 80% of their exports left the country via the Black Sea. For the last at least three weeks now, Russia on a daily basis has pounded Odessa and also the port cities of Chornomorsk and Nikolaevka and Yuzhny and Izmail on a daily basis. First of all, hitting any ship moving in or out of those ports, and also systematically destroying all of the port infrastructure of those ports. And company after company, these ports have officially shut down. And all of these companies, from sunflower oil to iron ore exports within Ukraine, have effectively just declared bankruptcy. They can't continue their businesses because they can't get their products out. And no one is talking about this. And while, yes, the Kiev regime is kept afloat largely by Western money, they still, an essential part of their state and military budget has to come from, of course, their own resources. And now that's completely cut off. Is the EU taxpayer capable of producing another 100 billion euros a year to support the Kiev regime on top of the 90 billion? I don't think so. This is a very effective campaign of economic strangulation.
Yeah, but I mean, the message when it comes to Ukraine is, and Trump has stepped back when it comes to Patriots, but the general sense in the media is that Zelensky is going to get them anyway. This disconnect keeps happening. And then, Russia's Amazon, people keep calling it Amazon in Russia. It's Wildberries, everyone, okay? That's very high profile. And Wildberries is a very beloved company in Russia. Everybody uses it. Okay, all right, come on, Mark. Anyway, it's very well known and run by a very interesting entrepreneur. But George, Mark is right. I mean, those of us that follow it, that Ukraine is getting pounded and pounded really hard. They, you know, with this petrol shortage in Russia, which got so much Western coverage. Yeah, for a day or so, 2 days, the petrol station won't have it, and then they reorganize. It's all called logistics. But Ukraine's gas stations are being eliminated systematically. George.
Yes, I have. And interestingly enough, this war in the Black Sea was started by Ukraine. Ukraine did this and received very favorable coverage as always. Yep. Oh, this is really neat. This is really...
Remember the grain deal? Remember the grain deal and all
that? Yeah, exactly. That's right. They started it and then Russia responded. And then once Russia responded, then we had the usual hysteria from Kiev. We need a UN Security Council meeting. You know, this is the world is being brought to the brink of starvation. And then they trot out the stories. Ukraine is the breadbasket of the world, and it's Russia is denying the wheat to the hungry in Africa. So yeah, this is, and of course, the attack on the Wildberries storage facilities also received amazingly adulatory coverage in the media. Oh, this is bringing the war straight home to the Russians. The Russians are now really suffering, and this is really great because all these small businesses are now being driven into bankruptcy because all of their inventory is being destroyed and they're not getting any compensation. So they're gone. And this is hailed by the media as great, even though it's clearly a war crime. I mean, if you're targeting civilian businesses and you want to drive them to bankruptcy, that is a war crime. And that has been what Ukraine's recent strategy, supported very much by the West, supported also by Trump. Trump also thought this was a very neat idea. But the fact is that if you're going to start doing this kind of, you're going to start waging a war in the Black Sea, you're going to start waging a war of driving businesses to bankruptcy, Russia's always going to do much better. And then this is what we've said, that clearly that this war in the Black Sea has been devastating for Ukraine. They're not getting anything out. Absolutely nothing out. Nothing's going in. They're not even getting any arms deliveries through the Black Sea. So the EU is going to have to step up and do what they did before. Hey, let's dump Ukrainian wheat into the European markets, and then we'll see how the European farmers...
That'll go down well. So, Mark, we had not long ago Marco Rubio, the U.S. Secretary of State, informing Congress that the United States has picked a side, which we all knew that from the very beginning, but at least under this current administration, they have made that clear. But then in the last news cycle, again, the same Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said they want to return to looking for an end to the conflict in Ukraine. Meanwhile, again, this is publicly known knowledge. If you read the Kremlin website, the idea of a negotiated end to this conflict is a thing of the past, at least from on the part of the Russians. Again, more disconnect. I mean, you know, everyday people can get this information. Doesn't seem to filter into the highest levels of the Trump administration. Thoughts?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, Marco Rubio was indeed admitting that the U.S. is a party to this conflict, so it's pretty hard for them to play the mediating role. And then this week, they took off the "we're a party to this conflict" hat to put back on the mediator hat, and now they're pretending once again that they're a neutral mediator and it's time to bring this war to an end. Why? Because the euphoria of, oh, the tide has turned and Ukraine is winning, and look at, ooh, big pretty smoke plumes on the outskirts of Moscow. Moscow's burning. Look at how great. Victory is right at hand.
Yeah, did you notice it kind of died down on Twitter? I've noticed that. Okay, yeah.
It all kind of died away. You know, the other shoe hasn't dropped yet. How bad the Kiev regime's position is, not just on the front line, but in the long range strike war as well. But Russia's not interested. They're done. They have made it clear. The Russian presidential spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, this week said that the regime needs to be destroyed. That's the only way. And they're noticed that it has been involved in attacks on Iran in the Caspian Sea. It has been sponsoring terrorist cells in Iraq, in the Sahel states, just seeking to make itself useful to the U.S. by attacking Russian allies and partners around the world. And it doesn't improve their international position any. Also, we had a member of the Defense Committee of the Russian Duma just say that there's no chance of this war ending this year or next year because it only ends on the Polish border.
All right, gentlemen, that is going. Actually, if we had time, I would like to examine the idea and then maybe future reality of Novorossiya. But Mark outbid me on this program, the Polish border. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here in RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.